The opinions expressed on this show do not necessarily represent those of the management of KUCI or the UC Board of Regents. For more information about this show, go to kuci.org. You are listening to 88.9 FM in Irvine. This is In the Garden Show, produced by UC Master Gardeners of Orange County, California. I am Katrina Kirkaby, and I'm here today with Tina Spindler, and we are your co-host of In the Garden with Master Gardeners. This week, we're going to be talking about July, and I think we should call our show, what do you think we should call it today, Tina?
I think we better call it Beat the Heat.
Boy, has it been warm.
Yes, I don't know about you, but boy, that heat wave in June got up to 102 degrees at my Irvine home. It was the warmest it's ever been here.
Oh, and it was up 106 or 7 at my house, and I was trying to do some gardening, and I was like, do I want to put my headlight on before it gets light out? I was up at 5-something in the morning trying to do a little bit of gardening before it got too hot.
Well, that's why we're going to talk about beating the heat, not just for our plants, but also for us, because we don't want ourselves to become have negative consequences from trying to keep our gardens going in this in terrible heat. So since it is July, we're probably likely to have a lot more of this heat, although maybe, hopefully, not as intense as it was in that June heat wave.
Oh, goodness. You know, and we're all gardeners, and we loved it. We love gardening, but boy, it's been a little bit difficult.
It is, and it is a challenge, and especially since we are continuing in this drought and have continued water issues that we have to be aware of, thought we better start talking about beating the heat with water and strategies to keep our plants and us as comfortable as we can. So should we get started?
Oh, let's get started. Yeah. There's so much to talk about.
Yeah. So first let's talk about water, of course, because that's on the top of everybody's list is, you know, how am I going to get through this summer without my whole garden dying and still be able to conserve water and stay within my limits. So we've mentioned in previous shows that we'll just go through real quickly what the ABCs are of watering efficiently and conservatively. And those are, first, if you're using automatic sprinklers, you want to cycle your sprinklers. So instead of having one 10-minute cycle, you want to have 2 5-minute cycles or 3 3-minute cycles. It's a lot easier for your plants to absorb that water. If they get a little bit, then it has a chance to soak in. Then they get a little bit more, and that has a chance to soak in even deeper. So that's the first one. Just a reminder, water in cycles. Number two, water early in the day.
Early.
As Katrina said, she was getting up at 5 o'clock in the morning.
I was gardening at 5 o'clock. My sprinklers had already been going.
So you definitely want your sprinklers to be going off early in the morning, you know, definitely before it gets light so that they aren't evaporating, so that the water is not evaporating when the sun is out. So water early in the morning, and obviously you want your sprinklers to cycle if you have overhead sprinklers. If you have, hopefully, maybe some drip irrigation, you can still water early in the morning because it's going to still, even with drip irrigation, you can have more evaporation as the sun hits that ground where the drip is going. It's still going to evaporate if the sun is out. So do it in the morning, whether you have drip or overhead irrigation.
You know, another thing to look at is how long does it take to cycle through? And that's one thing. I have a lot of stations to my sprinklers, and if I think, oh, I'm going to water at 5 o'clock, well, I'm not going to get through them. So one thing we might think about is, like, how long will this whole process take, and then how do we back into it?
Exactly. That's a really good point. So if you just, you know, do the math, if you've got, you know, 12 stations and you're going to have a cycle of, you know, 5 minutes on each station, that's an hour right there. So if you're going to have 2 of those cycles, you're going to have to allow for 2 hours of irrigation. So if you want that to be done before the sun comes up at, you know, 5:45, back it up 2 hours and start your irrigation at 3:45. So it may be a little different in the summer than it is when you do it in the winter.
Well, you know, in the wintertime you don't need as much, and also it gets light later.
Exactly. That's so, what I mean. You know, just starting it at you know, 6 o'clock in the wintertime might be fine because it really doesn't get fully light until 7. So, and you have a lot shorter timing on your cycle. So anyway, That's our first advice. If you are not irrigating with a timer and you're doing some hand watering, particularly of your pots, then you again want to get yourself out early before the sun is up, or at least before the sun is fully hot, like Katrina was doing the other morning, and get your irrigation of your pots done early in the morning for two reasons. One, you want to give those plants a chance to soak up that water through all of their stems and leaves so that by the time the sun does hit them, they are fully irrigated. If you wait until 10 o'clock in the morning and the sun's already hitting them, they're not going to have a chance to fend off that heat because they're not going to be able to absorb that moisture in time for that heat to be.
You could also burn the plants too, can't you?
You can, yeah. If you are spraying them overhead with water and you have those glossy drops on their leaves, especially tender plants, if you have some, you know, say impatiens or something in a pot, and then the sun hits that glossy water, you could easily, you know, burn those. The sun could burn those.
So you think you're helping the plants out, but you're actually cooking your plants.
Yeah, exactly. You're like a little magnifying glass on the leaves. So.
Now, Tina, tell us why we want to do it in the morning versus at night, like after the sun just sets.
You can do it at night, but if you do it at night, be sure that you are not watering the leaves of the plant. And the reason is that if you leave the water on the leaves of the plant overnight, that's going to facilitate fungal diseases growing. And so it's best to water early in the morning when the sun is going to come out and dry those leaves off really quickly so that fungal diseases don't have an opportunity to form, you know, over that long period of the night. So you can water at night. I mean, if you get home from work and, you know, you had to leave early and you couldn't do it in the morning, then go ahead and do it at night. But I would avoid wetting the leaves if at all possible.
Because then that's something else you have to deal with.
Yeah. But, you know, the bottom line is your plants need water. So, you know, just make sure you do give them water. But preferably early in the morning. If you do it at night, preferably don't get the leaves wet. So the other thing, I want to give a couple other hints for plants in pots. We always talk about mulching, and we do want to mulch our gardens. That's a huge thing to do, especially in the summertime. It's good all year, but especially in the summertime, mulching your beds of plants in your garden, whether they're vegetable beds or just decorative beds, is a great thing to do because it gives that insulating layer, and it keeps the water from evaporating, and it also keeps your soil cooler. It's, you know, a little shield to the sun. But nobody ever or rarely talks about mulching pots. And I've discovered over the last few years that when I remember and get my act together and I mulch my pots, that my plants are so much happier, especially in the summertime. So I've been mulching my, especially the larger pots, you know, the ones that are, because we always advise growing things in, you know, bigger pots are better, 14 inches to, you know, 24 inches or 28 inches or 30-inch pots. You know, think of if you have any fruit trees in pots, like I have a couple of citrus trees in pots. And man, since I've been mulching those citrus trees in the pots, they do so much better. So when
that's amazing. Yeah. I go places and I don't see that being done. And that's probably one of the reasons why I stopped using pots as much as because I couldn't keep up with it.
You can't keep up with the water. And it's not just the water, but think about it. When that sun beats on the bare soil in the pot and it's beating on the outside of the pot, those poor roots, that poor plant, is getting heated up from both the sides where the pot is getting hot and from the top where the sun is beating down on the soil. So the poor thing, you know, unless it's a succulent and doesn't mind having, you know, that extreme heat, is really going to be struggling, you know, to cope with that. And you're going to be struggling to cope with the watering because it's evaporating both from the sides of the pot, if it's a, you know, clay pot, and also from the top. So mulching, and what I like to use in kind of permanent plantings that are in pots, you know, if I have blueberry or citrus or some, you know, edible kind of thing in a pot. But even if I have, you know, like I have a plumeria in a pot, you know, and those like heat. But what I've discovered is if I put a layer of the little bark chips on top of that, that they are just that much happier, and I don't have to be, I still have to be diligent about watering, but I don't have to, you know, like worry to death that I didn't get to it at the right time of the day,
yeah.
right? You know, I can stretch it out another day. Or if I didn't manage to get it watered in the morning, I know odds are it's going to be okay if I do it in the evening. So do think about mulching your pots. The other thing to consider doing, especially if you have some pots that are, say, in that mid-size range, maybe they're like a 12-inch or 14-inch pot, so maybe you don't have that much soil surface to mulch. The other thing that I've done that has really helped in the summertime is I double pot. And so what you do is you take that 12-inch pot and you drop it inside a 14 or a 16-inch pot. And then you can, you know, throw mulch on top and in between the two pot edges. And what that does is it's insulation.
Insulation.
And so then even though the sun's beating on the outside of the outer pot, it's not beating on the outside of that inner pot. And so that soil gets to stay a few degrees cooler than it would otherwise. So those are a couple of ways that you can help your potted plants beat the heat.
That's a great idea. You know, Tina, well, I put off doing some mulching because we had to do some work on our sprinkler system. And I could not believe it because we've been really good about mulching, but I cannot believe how much water, more water I had to use.
I bet.
And my Shasta daisies that I got out of your yard years ago that somebody gave me, I came home and they're wilted. And I'm like, I cannot believe it's never happened before.
And it's because they were missing their mulch.
They're missing their mulch.
Yeah.
And it's inexpensive. In this heat, you know, it's so much. In this heat we're having in Southern California and how we're trying to conserve water. And it just, you know, we go on and on about mulch. But I can't say enough about it.
Yeah, I can't either. Because I never have enough room for enough tomatoes, right?
Right.
I always plant some tomatoes in pots. And last year was the first time I ever mulched my tomatoes that were in the pots, and they did so much better.
And so, in what way did they do better?
Well, you know how tomatoes can get kind of super leggy? Mm-hmm. You know, the ones you plant in the ground, you know, where they have a more consistent source of moisture, at least for me, those are usually leafier, you know, they're fuller. They almost self-shade, you know, mm-hmm. because they get so dense. And the tomatoes that I plant in pots are just lankier, you know. They don't, their leaves aren't as broad, it seems like, and you know, that could be a number of things. It could be, you know, in my garden, it could be inadequate watering, it could be irregular feeding, because we all know that when you have things in pots, you need to feed them more regularly and water more regularly. But the one thing that I started doing last year was to mulch those tomatoes with the little bark chips, and you know, I probably was as erratic about feeding and watering as I generally am because I'm, you know, on the go hither and thither. But just the fact of mulching made them look more vigorous last year. And so I did it again this year. And guess what? They're looking lush and healthy. And
you know,
so I really attribute that, I think, to the mulch. Yeah.
You know, and a lot of times, speaking of tomatoes, if they get too hot, they drop their buds. And
yeah,
that's
absolutely
another way to keep if your things are getting really, really hot, one way to keep them cooler.
Well, and I'm glad you mentioned that, Katrina, because I know some folks will probably be surprised in the weeks ahead that their tomatoes and their peppers are not setting as much fruit as they have expected. And if you had the temperatures that Katrina and I had that were in the 90s and 100s in late June, you can expect a little lull in your production of those veggies because they don't set fruit when it gets that hot. So don't think that you have failed or there's some, you know, weird disease. It's just true that your plants will not set fruit when it gets that hot. Now, as the temperatures come down and they get, you know, back into their normal cycle of growth, you should get, you know, fruit set again. But don't be surprised if you have a little, you know, less fruit than you were expecting.
I know that's going to happen to us because it got really hot. That's
super hot.
Yeah.
So anyway, if you're going to beat the heat, just to recap, by irrigating as we discussed and by mulching. And honestly, there's a third thing that I've done with my strawberries because my poor little strawberry plants fry when it gets that hot. I use beach umbrellas. I have one raised bed that's completely devoted to strawberries, and when it gets this hot, I put beach umbrellas over it.
I love it.
Isn't that? I mean, it's actually kind of fun when people come over because they'll say, "What the heck are you doing?"
And Tina's at it again.
The crazy gardener. But yeah, I just, what happens is it gives those strawberry plants a little break from the heat, and then they don't shrivel up and die, because the strawberries really do not like the super heat. And if by chance you used black mulch on your strawberry bed, for sure, when we start getting these hot days, you got to take that black mulch off, or you will completely fry every strawberry plant that you have. Odds are.
Sounds like you know about this.
Because I did it. I thought, oh, I'm going to have strawberries early a few years ago, and so when I planted them, I, you know, black mulched it, and I did get strawberries early, but then I lost the whole patch come July because they just fried without taking the black mulch off. So yeah, just a word to the wise. I mean, you'll notice the commercial farmers, you know, they plow under their strawberry fields every year. So the mulch, you know, that plastic mulch that they use, it's never on the plants in July. You know, they've plowed those fields under and, you know, taken that mulch up. But if you, like me, I don't want to replant every year. My strawberry plants are perennials, and they'll last for a good 3 years or so. But not if you have them mulched with black plastic in July and August.
You cook the roots, right?
Yeah.
Cook the plant and the roots.
So anyway, word to the wise. And then as far as keeping yourself cool, as Katrina said, you know, it's early morning gardening, or after the sun has gone down gardening.
For me, I don't do the heat well, and I find out if I just get up real early, and I can either do a little bit every day, or just a bit here and a bit there, and by 7-8 o'clock, done.
Yeah, and why just, not?
Why not? It's pretty outside too.
It is.
You have to be willing to get up early. You know, we're a couple diehard kind of people, but if you're up early anyways, and you don't want to deal with the heat, just get outside and do a little bit every day.
And I actually, one of my favorite times to garden in the summer is I like to garden because it stays late till 8:30. I love to garden after dinner.
I do that too.
Yeah, so you know, eat dinner at 6:30 or so, go out in the garden at 7:30, and you get an hour in the garden to just putter around.
Depends on how hot it is.
True.
On those really hot days, early in the morning.
Yeah.
But I do also when it's not so hot, and then we get some shade in the yard.
Well, that's why I like to do it, is because my veggie garden is shaded from about 5 o'clock, 4 or 5 o'clock on, and so I can go out in the veggie garden in total shade. In the early to late evening, and just putter around out there. And unless it's been a crazy hot day, it's usually quite pleasant because we'll end up getting a bit of a breeze, you know, in the late afternoon. So that's another thing to do, is consider just changing the time.
Yeah, think about where you live and the temperature. And I know my yard, part of my yard, I could do it. It's easier in the afternoon because there's more shade. And it's nicer.
And
it's part of my yard is in the afternoon. It's going to be in the sun until... It's still hot.
Right. You have to pick your location. But also, you know, I find, you know, taking out, you know, maybe if it's cocktail hour, you know, a little cocktail in the garden doesn't hurt, or a little glass of wine. That's always nice, too.
Oh, there we go.
Another reason to do it in the early evening is you can, you know, have a little party. Put a sprig of mint in your drink, you know.
Have a good time. God, I learn a lot from you, Tina.
My secrets, my bad habits. So those are some clues for beating the heat. Of course, you know, I have really gotten better as I've gotten older about wearing a hat when I go out in the garden.
Oh, yeah.
I now always put a hat on. And the other thing that I do now that I find is actually cooler. Used to be I'd wear tank tops, you know, when it was super hot and sunny. But what I've discovered is wearing a loose sunshirt out there without a tank top, just, you know, one of those long-sleeved, you know, very lightweight sunshirts, is actually a lot cooler than a tank top, because the breeze can still, you know, blow through the shirt, and yet you've completely protected yourself from the sun. So another tip that
I've done that, and I also have taken on occasion, it's only when it's really, really hot, is because I really try to avoid the heat by early mornings or late afternoons or evenings. But they have these things that you could put ice water, and you put them around your neck.
I've never tried those.
They're okay. Yeah. You know, it's not nearly as good as getting out early in the morning or late, but it's just if you're kind of on the fringe there and if you're like myself that can't handle heat.
Yeah.
You know, I've done that, and it's not my favorite, but if you're on that borderline.
If you need to be out there because you've been gone or something.
And I also get a bottle of water, and I freeze half of it. And then I put my water in, and I always have ice water.
Yeah, for sure, stay hydrated when you're out there. Absolutely, yeah. And, you know, it's great to make, you know, you see at spas, you know, where they'll have the ice water.
Cucumbers and lemons.
Exactly. Do that at home. What the heck?
Pick some of that out of your yard. Stick it in there.
Stick it in there. You know, dump some ice in and have a pitcher of that sitting in the shade on your patio that you can go refresh yourself with every, you know, little bit of time while you're out there.
Yeah, we talk about, you and I don't do care for the heat so much.
Right.
So some people
we avoid it.
We're telling you how to avoid it, but some people are fine with it. So it's all whatever works for you.
Yeah, absolutely. And speaking of that, and being out in the garden when it is hot, odds are, because of the time of year, you might have a lot of barbecues and get-togethers mm-hmm. in your yard, right?
Oh, exactly.
And so let's talk about that for a minute. What can we do to make our yards look good and to have people out there enjoying themselves when the weather's a little warm?
Yeah, I think we also talk about what time of day we want to have them out there.
Yeah, yeah. So my favorite time to entertain in the summer is the late afternoon, you know, on into the evening, because in the very, very heat of the day, not the most pleasant out there. And when we're doing that, we want to make sure that our yard looks nice, but goodness, do we want to spend a lot of time digging and planting new stuff? Probably not this time of year. But if you are going to have a big event, you know, for instance, around the 4th of July, or if, like,
weddings.
My husband and I are having a big anniversary in August, flat in the middle of August, and we're going to have a barbecue at our house to celebrate with friends and family. And am I going to do a huge amount of planning? No, absolutely not. But if there is some, you know, plant that's died in a prominent place, what kind of things could I, you know, pop in there? And one of my favorite things to plant in the summer are the salvias. If I need a little bit of color that isn't going to freak out by being transplanted into the garden in July, in the summer heat, a salvia is a great thing.
And there's a lot of different kinds of salvia.
So many different.
If you're thinking about different colors, you have a lot to choose from, too.
You really do. And then the other thing that I will do is if there are some decorative pots at strategic places, mm-hmm. like at the entryway to my house or on the patio in the backyard, then I will plant those up with some warm season annuals that like the heat, like zinnias in addition to salvias or marigolds or vincas. Those kinds of plants will look great. They'll give a pop of color where we're going to be gathering or where people are going to be entering. But I'm not going to do a whole lot, you know, in the yard. It's going to be a few accent pots and maybe, like I said, a key salvia, you know, here or there if I've had some plants that have died.
Yeah, I think most of our gardeners know that we try to plant in spring and fall. But if you have to, you know, the plants don't like being transplanted that much either in the summertime. And they take more water. You have to be more diligent with them. But if you have to, these are some great ideas just to add a little bit of color and pizzazz it up for a little bit and not have to do a lot of work.
Absolutely. The other thing that I will do is I'll back up 6 weeks from when we're going to have our little event, and that will be early July for my roses. And so what I'll do with my roses in early July is if they're blooming, I'll pick a bunch of bouquets and bring them inside the house in early July. And then I'm going to feed those rose bushes in early July so that I'll have this nice flush of bloom 4 to 6 weeks later.
So it's now early July. Guess what she's been doing this week?
Well, yeah, I haven't started yet, but I'm about to. So in the next week, I'm going to be, you know, picking whatever's blooming, bringing them in the house, really enjoying them, so that I can know that I can time this, you know, next flush of bloom for hopefully about 4 weeks from now. And in August, I'll have some nice new blooms on my rose bushes, and it'll be great for the party. And then the other thing that I'll do is, when my husband had a big birthday a couple years ago, in our backyard, we had another one of these barbecues, and I went and bought his birthday's in October, and I went and bought chrysanthemums because that's what was blooming like crazy in the nurseries.
Right? I do the same thing. Oh, and my goodness.
I just put pots of chrysanthemums all over the backyard, you know, put the little blooms of chrysanthemums in some baskets. Those were centerpieces. So just go to the nursery if you're having an event. Look and see what's blooming like crazy and throw them in pots, throw them in baskets for your centerpieces. Make it easy on yourself. Don't do a lot of digging, but make sure you have some, you know, fun, lively color to add to your party.
Lot less work. It's too hot to do it.
Yeah.
You know, it's we love gardening. You guys, we love gardening. And we're telling you, don't kill yourself.
Yeah. Because telling you, don't garden.
And there's times that we're going to tell you, garden a lot.
Yeah. July is not the time when you want to be doing a lot of digging. You want to be focusing on watering and preserving your water, and then just adding a little bit of color if you've got a special event. But we don't want you, where we do want you to put your effort is still in your veggie garden.
Oh,
your edibles.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what have you got coming in season right now, Katrina?
Oh, my goodness. You know, tomatoes. I'm worried about the dropping of tomatoes. We have a lot of eggplant and peppers and, oh, my goodness. I love kale, so we do lots of kale. And it kind of got wilted pretty bad a couple weeks ago. I couldn't keep enough water on the poor things.
Oh.
Gosh, what are we doing? We harvested all our onions, and so they've dried out and braiding our onions right now.
Very cool.
So I have lots of onions that are hanging in our kitchen.
How fun.
So it's fun. And by braiding them, they get lots of air, and I could use them for several months. And it's kind of a neat thing to just go over and snip off an onion.
Yeah,
and
that's really
And you
quiet.
Could braid them inside.
Oh,
it's so much, Tina, it's so easy. It's the easiest thing, and it looks pretty, and people go ooh and ah, and they think you're so talented. Well, you're talented.
No.
Tina's talented, but for me, I'm like, well, I know how to braid a little girl's hair, and you just kind of add the onions, you know, the onions, you leave the stems on them, and you just kind of just braid them, and you hang them in your kitchen.
You know what? I'm going to do that, because there's still a patch of mine that I haven't brought, and usually what I do is when I harvest them, I cut off those stems, and then I lay them on a tray and let them dry for a few days before I bring them inside. But I think I'm going to try and bring them.
Actually, let them dry because you don't want to get, you know, mildew or mold or anything
on
the inside with a green top. So you let them till they completely dry out. And then you have when you used to braid your daughter's hair like French braid.
Oh, for sure.
So you start braiding it, and you add every braid, you add another onion into it. And then you could do these huge long strings, and then you tie some like raffia or something around it, and you could hang it up in your kitchen.
Oh, we need to do a video.
I know. Try to describe it
Too
on
bad
there.
It's not TV.
It is so easy to do. And then when you're ready for an onion, you can just go over with your kitchen snips and just snip off an onion and hand it to somebody, and they like,
I love it.
They love it, and they go, "Where'd you get it?" And I go, "Oh, from my garden." And they're like, "And the braid looks pretty."
Yeah.
You know, it's a pretty thing to add to your kitchen, and you have it. You don't even have to go outside and get your harvest.
You know, I like that because I have had trouble in the past when my harvest has been too extensive of onions. And they've had to sit in the bin inside the kitchen in the dark too long that I'll get some that start to rot. But I bet if they're hanging up, that doesn't happen.
At least at my house, I find that versus keeping them in a bin, I've tried putting them in like the old hosiery things and bags. And it doesn't seem to get as much air as this actually hanging. I don't hang them in the sun. They're like in my entryway into my kitchen, and I just hang them off a pole between two cabinets. And I hang
that
them
in my little butler, what we call the butler pantry, which I have no butler, of course, but, you know, it's the little room off of the kitchen. I could totally do
it. It looks pretty.
Yeah.
You know, it looks really pretty, and that's for us and where I live. They're not in direct sun or anything, but for us, and it's just easy, and it hangs up. And when you need them, you just go snip one, and they last longer for me that way.
Sure. I bet I'm going to try that. This week, I'm doing that. So
right.
Cool.
See? Easy.
This is why we like to do this show, because we learn from each other, and there's always a new project to do.
I know.
So talking about learning from each other, before we get off the subject of our veggie gardens and entertaining, let's talk just a minute. It's not a cooking show, but let's just throw out a few ideas. We talked about making the water with whatever you have, lemon slices or cucumber slices or even watermelon chunks. What else do you like to do this time of year?
Well, there's a lot I like to do this time of year, but I have to do a short break, a station break here, and let everybody on our show know that you are listening to KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine, and that the opinions expressed on this show do not necessarily represent those of the management of KUCI or the UC Board of Regents. For more information about this show, go to kuci.org. Okay, now we follow the rules. Now we can talk more about food and cooking. And where are we going?
Okay, so let's talk tomatoes, of course. So what are your favorite things to make with all of your tomato harvest?
Oh, my gosh. I love the simplest thing, especially when it's hot, is tomatoes and buffalo mozzarella and basil or maybe some feta or some goat cheese and maybe some balsamic vinegar with a little bit of olive oil and some kosher salt over the top, and I'm just a happy camper. I grow probably like 6 or 8 different kinds of cherry tomatoes, and sometimes I'll just do a big bowl of tomatoes and just slice those cherry tomatoes in half, and it's just incredibly yummy. Or I slice the big tomatoes and put some buffalo mozzarella between them with some basil over the top and maybe some Parma.
I did that actually last night. I had 3 different kinds of tomatoes, you know, different colors, the dark purple, a yellow, a red, and just did exactly that. Sliced them up, had the sliced mozzarella, drizzled it with olive oil and balsamic vinegar, and sprinkled with basil. And as my daughter says, she says, "Mom, do you think I could live on this?" I said, "I think you could. You know how it got all the vitamins from the tomatoes, got a little protein from the mozzarella.
It's easy to do.
I think you could live on it."
Oh my gosh, I like it so much. And we eat it so much, and I never get tired of it, and it's so good. And it's great because people know we do a lot of tomatoes, so whenever we're going somewhere, we say, "What can we bring?"
And that's what they ask.
I mean, all summer long, this is what we're doing. And it's really nice because we don't have to heat up the house with cooking anything.
Yes. Well, it's funny you say that about people always asking you to bring that. I always get asked to bring bruschetta because I, you know, do the homegrown tomatoes, chop those up with onions and the basil, and just a touch of balsamic vinegar on top and toss it all together, and then I, you know, slice the baguette on the diagonal so you get those nice long mm-hmm. slices, mm-hmm. and I crush a couple garlic cloves in some olive oil and brush that flavored olive oil on the top of the sliced baguette, right. And then I put it on a cookie sheet, sprinkle Parmesan, freshly grated Parmesan cheese on top of the little baguette slices, and then toast them in the oven. And you bring that, those freshly made toasts with the garlic and cheese flavor, and then the homemade tomato bruschetta. And, you know, in fact, I had one family that I actually brought all the ingredients. We were on a houseboat trip, and their son, who was a teenager at the time, as fast as I could bring those toasts out of the oven, the child was just eating them. And I finally had to say, "You have to stop or there won't be any for anyone else." But he was just shoveling them one after another into his mouth. But yeah, that's what I get requested to bring all summer long.
And how we get known for certain things.
Yeah, exactly.
But that sounds so yummy.
Yeah, but it's basically the same thing. It's just assembled in a slightly different way, you know. So yeah, do use your tomatoes. And then our friend and fellow master gardener, Kay Havens, who's been on our show before, taught me the delicious beauty of grilling these vegetables that we get out of our garden.
Yeah.
So Kay makes sandwiches out of grilled eggplant slices and grilled zucchini slices. And you can't even tell that you're not eating a burger or something because she brushes them with olive oil. She seasons them with chopped herbs and some salt and pepper, and just briefly grills those slices on the barbecue, so you get that barbecue taste. And then she layers them on French rolls, you know, like a hoagie. And you know, you can drizzle some fresh bruschetta on top or some more balsamic vinegar on top. Put a crisp lettuce leaf if you want, whatever you want on top. And you just eat them with these veggie sandwiches that are to die for.
Oh, my gosh.
To die for. So.
Oh, it sounds so yummy.
Yeah.
And just grilling the vegetables by themselves. Sometimes we'll do the grill, like the zucchini that you're talking about.
Yeah.
And I get it a little soft, and I'll put a little bit of Parmesan cheese on top.
Ooh,
freshly grated Parmesan.
Idea.
And it just, like, oh.
Melts. And
it melts, and then you just sit there, and you can eat zucchini after zucchini of that stuff.
Yeah.
I just love doing that. And then I love grilling the Japanese eggplant and just kind of scooping it out. And my husband likes putting a little hot, like, sriracha on it or something hot.
Never tried
and
that.
And that's his thing. But I love the Japanese ones. I don't even need this little salt on it, and I'm good to go.
Yeah, those are a lot thinner than the traditional eggplant. Well, anyway, I guess today's show we can call In the Garden and in the Kitchen, right? So just a few quick ideas for you.
Oh, my gosh.
But speaking of those veggies, we don't want them to poop out. So should we talk for a minute about how to keep your veggie garden going?
Yes. Let's talk.
Yeah. So as Katrina and I both mentioned, you know, we've harvested our onions, right? Because here in this part of the world, we do short day onions. And so they mature in June, and then we're kind of done with our onions. And so now you have a little bit of vacant space, perhaps, in your veggie garden. So what can you do? It's July. You can't plant cool season veggies. Can you still plant warm season veggies? And the answer is absolutely yes. And that's what you want to do. It's a great time to plant some new tomatoes, because I always plant a second crop of tomatoes, if I have room, in July. And I love to do that, because then as your tomatoes start petering out in August, you've got these new tomato plants that'll probably last you till November or maybe even December.
Yeah, it depends on where you live and how much sun you get and et cetera, et cetera. But I also, Tina, I tend to buy them in six packs or buy them already started. Do you do that too?
Oh, I don't start anything from seed in July except for, you know, carrots. If you're planting a new crop of the root veggies, yes, start those from seeds. But any of the others, the tomatoes, the peppers, cucumbers or squash or eggplant, all of those I buy either in six packs or four inches. It'll just take too long for them to get going. And the seeds will struggle because, again, it's so darn hot.
Yeah.
How do you keep them moist so that they germinate and the poor little brand new plants don't wilt?
It's hard on them. Yeah.
So, yeah.
And absolutely. You have a life, too, besides gardening,
oh,
right?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we're usually on vacation. You know, don't we all try to take trips during the summer?
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, for sure, buy six packs. I actually, especially for the tomato plants, you know, I probably only have room for another four tomato plants. So, splurge, buy a four-incher, right?
Well, exactly.
You know, buy four-inch tomato plants for your July crop and get those going. You can plant beans, are the other thing that I will plant from seed in July.
Really?
Yeah. They don't do often as well as quickly as my ones that I'll start from seed in March. But, you know, if my beans are done and I'm still not sick of beans, then I'll try planting another crop in July so that I can continue to have those green beans, you know, until, you know, October, November.
That's
and
wonderful.
Then should we talk about picking? Because maybe
picking.
Some of our listeners are new to Veggie Garden. Maybe they could use some tips on when to harvest.
That's a great idea.
Okay, cool. Let's talk about that. So tomatoes, it's pretty obvious, right? Wait until they're that nice ripe color, and then you want to pick them. You don't want to pick tomatoes until they're fully ripe, because why? That's when you get the best flavor. And you can buy the early picked ones in the supermarket that have no flavor. But if you're growing them at home.
Oh, you just wait.
Wait.
I love sending people off to go gather.
Of course.
You know, just like, I don't pick early. It's like I pick when I'm going to go use it. And just
let them feel that warm tomato, you know. But some other things are a little bit maybe trickier. So let's talk about green beans. So I like to pick green beans when they're really young, when, you know, you can still see, you know how they have that little bit of fuzz on the outside of the bean? So you still want them to have a little bit of that fuzz, and you don't want to really see the seeds. You know how when the seeds inside the bean start to really form, then you'll see kind of these lumpy
They kind
beans.
Of pocket out.
Yeah.
And when they get really big and lumpy,
you don't.
You know, and just snap one off and taste it.
Yeah. And and you don't want those big lumpy ones. You want them when they're smooth, have a little bit of that fuzziness on them. And
tender.
Tender, tender, and sweet. So all you have to do is steam them or stir fry them, and they're wonderful. So that's a good time to pick the beans. Cucumbers. Now, I like to pick my cucumbers a little bit on the young side because I don't like to have the super big seeds in the center.
Same here.
Yeah.
And they also seem to be a little bit more firm, and I like the taste better when they're a little bit on the smaller side.
Exactly.
And the seeds get, when the seeds are small, it's one thing, but when those seeds get larger, they're just...
I don't like to eat them.
I don't. My dogs like them.
So oh,
I
how funny!
I know. I scoop them out and give them to my dogs, and they love them.
That's hysterical.
But I don't.
Yeah. That's
funny. So they go a little too long. Food the dogs are happy. My dogs like all of cucumbers, though. But
yeah. Also, the trick with beans and cucumbers that you and I know, and zucchini and tomatoes, most everything, is you want to harvest often, because the more often that you harvest, the more your plants are going to continue to bear. If you let those fruits get too mature, then the plant thinks, okay, I'm done, because the plant's programmed to produce seeds for the next generation. And so if you let those beans get to the point where the seeds are real big, then the plant's going to say, oh, did my job. I made seeds. You know, now my next generation can come. So if you pick them before the seeds get mature, then the plant is going, oh, geez, job's not done. Need to make more fruit.
You know? And more fruit, and more fruit.
And more fruit, and which, of course, is what we want.
Yeah, and if you have too much, just give it away.
Yeah,
right? People love homegrown stuff.
Unless it's zucchini. Then maybe they'll run.
But. Oh, my gosh. Our neighbors roll up their car windows when they see us coming with zucchini. And the doors, they don't answer the door. We all have those zucchini jokes.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, right now I have so many zucchini at home, I can't believe it.
Yeah, and I'm actually, you finally get, you know, when the first ones come, you're so excited to see them. Then you're gone for a weekend, and then you come home and you've got those
huge
ones. And at first, I always try to cut them and stuff them with, you know, a ground beef mixture and have the stuffed zucchini. But man, by the second or third week of that, it's like, oh, big zucchini in the compost bin, or, you know, in the green waste bin. Don't want to bother with that anymore.
Exactly. You can only be excited about that for so long.
Yeah, exactly.
There's so many other things coming out of the garden to enjoy.
Yeah. Let's see, what other tips? Oh, in case people are growing melons, a lot of us don't have room for melons, but just in case you did plant melons, here's a couple tips about when to pick them. So when your watermelon, for instance, you want to look at the underside of the watermelon, and you know how it's white, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, you want to wait till that's creamy, a creamier color, not that white, greenish-white color.
Mm-hmm.
It won't be ripe yet. Thumping on it probably doesn't work so well, because by the time it gets that hollow sound in your garden, it might be overripe. So better to look at that underside and see when it's more of a creamy, yellowy, tending towards yellow color than that white-green color. And then also the other clue is there'll be those tendrils where it's attached to the vine, and when those tendrils start to turn brown, then it's ripe. Yeah, so those are some tips for watermelon.
Just pay a little more attention.
Pay a little more attention, yeah. Let's see, what else? Oh, cantaloupe. You want to pick cantaloupe if you planted any of those. When it's at what's called the full slip stage, and that's when there's a crack that forms around where the stem connects to the fruit. So you know that looks like the giant belly button, you know, at the end of the cantaloupe when you buy it in the store.
Mm-hmm.
Well, when you're growing it yourself, if you're getting the little crack where the stem attaches to that belly button kind of area, then that is an indication that your cantaloupe should be pretty ripe.
That's a great to know.
Yeah. And then, of course, for zucchini, you want to pick that when it's young. You don't, you know, an inch in diameter, a little bit more than an inch in diameter. Those are great sizes.
Oh, they're soft and tender.
Yeah.
You know, some people like to see how big they can get, but they get hard.
And they get mealing inside, too.
Yeah, yeah.
I love going to the fair, and they'll have these giant zucchinis that have gotten ribbons, and I'm thinking, actually, no, that's not the best zucchini. You know, it'd be better if it was little. Better eating, anyway.
Better eating.
Yeah. And then, let's see. Oh, peppers. You want to wait till the peppers are, you know, have that nice, if they're bell peppers, that nice blocky size, right? And you want to pick them when you feel the walls are you know, firm. You don't want to let them go too long because then the walls can start to get a little soft in places. So what I do, especially if I want some of them to turn red, is I'll pick, you know, probably half the peppers at the green stage, and then I'll leave the other half on if I want them to turn into that red, nice red color.
And then you can enjoy them throughout.
Both ways, yeah both ways. Of course, the hotter peppers, you know, won't get that blocky size. They get kind of that longer size.
And there's so many hot peppers out there.
It's
and
hard.
They have so many descriptions out there. So probably read the tag or look up what you, the pepper that you have.
Yeah, the other thing I've read is that remember, write down when you planted it because it will tell you how many days until they're ripe. So if you're not sure if it's ripe yet and it said, you know, 60 days till it's ripe and it's only been 45, you might want to wait a little bit longer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Wouldn't that also tell with kind of how much sun you get in your yard and how warm it is and the soil and the fertilizer?
You never know for sure, right? We're not farmers. We're not, you know, experienced enough to know exactly when to harvest. So
what's really nice, though, is most of the plants you could look at.
Yeah.
And say, oh, this looks ready.
Looks ready, and then harvest one and taste it, you know. And if it tastes too green, you know, then let the remaining ones linger a little while before you harvest them. And do be careful with the hot peppers, because I know I've planted some plants in the past that I wasn't sure how hot they were because I wasn't familiar with them. So do always, before you chop up a whole one and add it to your...
Oh, goodness.
to your chili or your salsa.
You didn't, did you?
You know, I put a little more in the salsa once than I should have. And there were some diehards who thought it was the best salsa ever, but it was a little too spicy for me. So do taste a little at a time before you
And those peppers, they can go all over the spectrum as far as heat.
Well, they can be dangerous.
Yeah, they can be really dangerous, and you got to watch with cutting them and putting. You know, if you don't wear gloves, you know, you might want to wear gloves with them because if your hands touch the peppers and touch your face or your eyes, you could burn it. I've even burned my hands cutting peppers.
I totally agree with that. I have burned my eyes thinking I had washed my hands and they were fine, and then you know you go on cooking and you rub your eye and. It is not pleasant.
So maybe those cheapy little gloves.
I do put on those
disposable
gloves when I cut peppers. It's just safer.
Oh God,
really? not bell peppers, but anything else.
The hot peppers.
Yeah.
And I keep the little tags to them too, because sometimes when you're planting something, you forgot what you plant.
Totally.
And
good idea.
It's like if you plant a bunch of different peppers now, which one was this one?
Yeah.
And which one was that one? And I tend to dehydrate a lot too.
Oh,
and
so, I didn't do that. That's a cool idea.
It's a great idea. And then I'd have my own peppers later in the season.
What I do is I don't dehydrate, but I do roast them, you know, on a cookie sheet.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'll bag them up in little individual Ziploc bags and freeze them. And when you defrost them, they're mushy, but they're fine in chili.
Oh.
So I do that, and then I just add them to chili all winter long when I make a pot of chili.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, but they won't look good. They'll look mushy, but the flavor of the roasted chili will be to die for, you know, in your pot of chili.
And what kind of chilies do you use?
You know, I use different ones. Every year I try, you know, different chilies. Mm. And so it just depends on what I tried that year, you know.
Wow, I might try that this year.
Yeah. Last year I planted the banana chilies, mm-hmm. you know, the ones that mm-hmm. are turned yellow, and I roasted a bunch of those. They were very prolific plants. And I roasted a bunch of those and then froze them and used them all winter long in enchiladas or, you know, like I said, a pot of chili. So anything where you want that kind of tortilla soup. They were great in tortilla soup.
Okay.
So, yeah, anything like that.
Well, I've dehydrated. I've done a little bit with more hot chilies. I'm going to do what you're doing. And then I have different, if I want to shake some hot peppers on something, I'll have like three different types of hot peppers depending on your palate.
Nice.
So it's easy to do, and I just chop it up real small and put it in a little shaker.
Shaker, sure.
And, you know, so I have friends that just don't like a lot of heat, and I have some friends that like a lot of heat.
So you just label and keep track.
I label and keep track, and then because I don't want to give the person who doesn't like a lot of heat a ghost pepper or
something.
I can't eat those either. Yeah. So they're usually not in my house, those when it's super, super hot. But it's nice. My husband likes it really spicy, so there's a jar for him.
For him.
That he can add to whatever he wants to that won't kill the rest of us.
Yeah, that's a great idea.
Oh, so many things. Huh? Yeah. I think this should be a cooking show.
I know. Well, I think you have an idea for a future show, don't you, where you want to get a chef on?
Yeah.
Yeah, that'll be fun. We'll look forward to that. So how much time do we have left?
Oh, we have about 6 minutes or so.
Okay, because there is one other thing I think might be nice to talk about. so we talked about what to plant in the veggie garden to keep it going, any of the hot season stuff. But this is also a good time of year. Your succulents, especially in my garden, the aeoniums, always tend to get, you know, super leggy. And I'm not going to plant a whole lot of stuff in July. But one of the things I do like to do is propagate my succulents.
Yes.
So why don't we talk about that for
Oh, that'd be great.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because as we know that we are probably permanently going to have to garden more water efficiently, one of the great things that we can add are succulents to our garden. And I know when I was not a succulent fan, to be honest, but as we have less and less water, I've been converting a lot of my pots, especially, to succulent pots. And I love doing it now. It's so much fun because
it's
foolproof. And so I just had a succulent pot that I have at our front doors, two twin pots.
I noticed those too.
Did you?
Oh, my goodness.
So I don't know if you noticed, but since the last time you were at my house, that purple aeonium, it's a beautiful purple color.
It's gorgeous.
Color, and it's the kind that sends out a lot of branches, and it also sends out clusters. So instead of just one aeonium head, you'll get one big one, and then it'll have all of these little babies around it. So it almost looks like a bouquet. And there was one stem that had gotten really long, and it looked a little awkward, you know, the awkward teenager. And so my husband was saying, that's not looking so good. And I said, you know what? He loves when I allow him to cut things back, right? I said, his favorite thing. I said, you can cut those off, but don't throw them away. Put them on my garden bench because I'm going to repot them. And so I took that stem, and I left about, say 6 inches of the stem, and then I left it lay on the garden bench so that the cut edge could callus over for a few days. And then you just get a new pot, and you fill it with cactus mix, and you stick that, you know, stem into the cactus mix about halfway. So you leave about, you know, 3 inches of it down in the soil and, you know, 2 or 3 inches above the soil. And sure enough, I will have a completely new pot of, you know, new aeonium plants that I can then combine probably in a bigger pot, and I'll put some other succulents around it, some Senecio that will be a, you know, a gray, green color that will kind of trail over the edges, and I'll do the thriller, filler, spiller thing and choose different succulents of different heights and different colors and different growing habits so that I'll end up with another beautiful succulent pot.
That's great. You know, people who listen to the show know I don't do a lot of pots because it gets really hot where I live, and then I travel and I get busy and I just don't take care of them. My exception is succulents. And by my front door, I have 4 pots of succulents. And they are like they're so easy to do. They're grateful for water, and I don't have to water them that often. As I go out, and I use my spigot from the kitchen when I'm heating water up because I'm trying to save water, and while the water's getting warm, and I just go put it on there, and they're not temperamental. They do like some water, especially when it's hot. You know, you do have to water them, but they don't need that much, and they're pretty forgiving, and they're gorgeous, and they're easy.
They're easy, and the fun thing is you can experiment and create things, and you can end up with scads of these pots.
Okay, I have
one. Easy to create them.
I have this one pot that everybody compliments me on, and it's hysterical because I have a succulent wall, and I was trimming my succulents, and I ran out of time, and I was cleaning up down below, and I went, I don't know what I'm going to get to this, and I just stuck all these pieces of succulents into this one pot and forgot about it. And it was like it rained, and I've watered it a little bit. Well, it's all now grown, and the colors are beautiful. And I'm like, wow, I was going to use these for transplants, but they're by my front door right now.
Yeah.
And I didn't try. It was just a waiting place for them to grow till I figured out where I was going to put them. And it looks good together.
That's the thing I've discovered that I love about succulents is they are completely and totally forgiving, and you can experiment and by happenstance end up with, like you said, a really beautiful arrangement that you just love.
It was a temporary, let's just stick them in here for now, yeah. And I'll find something, and I discovered them later, and they've grown up and they look pretty.
Yeah, absolutely. I wanted to give one other tip about succulents that I also kind of discovered by accident. So because succulents, you know, grow in the desert, you know, in arid climates where the soil is not particularly fertile, I just assumed that you didn't need to fertilize succulents, kind of ever, right? Mm-hmm. And so I didn't, and my succulent pots looked okay. Well, I, you know, was on this garden tour, you know, back in May, and so I was fertilizing, you know, general things in the garden, and I had this fish emulsion based fertilizer that was in a bottle that you can connect to the hose, right? Mm-hmm. And so I was just out, you know, spraying the roses and, you know, the other stuff so that it would be beautiful and blooming when this garden tour was going on. And I just thought, oh, you know, here, succulent pots, you can, you know, have a little bit of this fish emulsion fertilizer. Oh my gosh, my succulent pots have never looked so good. So then I did a little bit of reading and discovered that, you know, they don't like a lot of fertilizer, particularly synthetic fertilizers, which are, you know, quite strong. And if you think about how they get fertilized in nature, it's probably just from bird droppings or, you know, bat droppings or lizard droppings or whatever. It's a very, you know, slow, not very strong fertilizer. And so it turns out fish emulsion is a fertilizer that mimics that sort of, you know, feeding. And so they actually were very excited to get the fish emulsion. So now, especially in my pots, I'm going to give them a little fish emulsion, you know, every month or two.
Well, I guess I've learned from you all the time, Tina.
Well, that was purely accidental until I then read that's what they like on occasion. Yeah.
That is so good to know. Yeah. I'm going to do that now. I've never done that. Even if I didn't do it, it turned out okay. So can you imagine what if I took a little bit of care?
You know, they don't die if you give them no fertilizer. They still continue to live. But what's happened is I've had, you know, they just look lusher. They look more, you know, more branches, more rosettes. They just look happier. So, yeah.
Well, I know what I'm going to be doing. I had a new project.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. With that being said, I think we're just about at the end of our time.
It always goes so fast, at least for us.
It does. And, yeah, until next week or to our next show, we wish everybody a wonderful, joyous week and enjoy your garden and stay cool and keep your plants cool and mulch.
Mulch and happy summer.
Happy summer. Take care and be well.